Okay, today's daf is Brachot Daf Yud Tet. We're at the bottom of Yud Chet Amud at Ve'af Rabbi Yonatan. I apologize if there is any background noise. First, to remind ourselves, give us a little context. What we mentioned yesterday is that some of the shitas in the Gemara maintain that the deceased were aware of what goes on in this world. We tried to prove that shita conclusively. We didn't bring an absolutely conclusive proof to it, and Rabbi Yonatan was the author of the shita that the deceased really do not know anything in this world. Not only do they not know anything, it's really not even relevant. They're not connected to this reality whatsoever. What we're going to see is even Rabbi Yonatan, who proposed the opinion that they are completely unfamiliar with what goes on in the world, went back on his opinion eventually, and was modeh, he admitted that actually he does believe the deceased are aware of what goes on in this world. And the way to read this Gemara is widely disputed, so I'm just going to try to explain it in the simplest way possible. So even Rabbi Yonatan went back on what he had initially said, as we saw that Rabbi Yonatan explained the following. He says, what does it mean, or how do I know that the deceased speak with one another? Shneamar, as it's written, the Kadosh Baruch Hu said, this is the land that I promised to Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, saying is an indication that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's a hint that HaKadosh Baruch Hu told someone to say this. My Lemor, so what does Lemor imply? Am HaKadosh Baruch Hu Lemoshe Lechem Mor Lehem Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Shivu Shenishbati Lechem Kvar Kiyam Tilevenechem. Go tell Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov that the swear that I made to them, I have now fulfilled amongst their children. And if they have zero connection or perception whatsoever what goes on in this world, then what's the point of telling them? They're not going to understand what you're talking about. Okay, but if you assume that they did know, then why did Moshe have to tell them? Either they're privy to what goes on in this world or they're not. What does it mean that Moshe told them? No, Kadosh Baruch Hu wanted them. Kadosh Baruch Hu wanted Moshe to be the bearer of good tidings. Basically, he wanted Moshe to have the privilege to be telling Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov that the swear made to them was fulfilled, because he had a massive hand in that being fulfilled, and that he brought them to Eretz Yisrael or right up until the border. And so Kadosh Baruch Hu withheld the information from them that they would normally know about, just so that Moshe could be the one to convey the information. Anyone who speaks badly about a deceased person, it's like he's speaking badly about a rock. Some say because they have no idea what you're saying about them, and some say they just simply don't care at that point. Any, is that really true? Vamar of Papa, Chadishtai Milta, Patre de Mar Shmuel, Venafal Kanya Mitlala Bazalar Nakidemoche. Is that really true? Because someone spoke badly about Rav Papa after he died, someone spoke badly about Demar Shmuel after he died, and a reed fell out of his ceiling and it cracked his skull. It's different for a massive Torah scholar. It's not them getting upset. It's Kadosh Baruch Hu defending the honor of the Torah scholars. He's the one who's doing this. Anyone who speaks badly about Talmidei Chachamim after they die will fall to Gehenim. Shneamar v'hametim akal kolutam yolechem Hashem polei avon shalom al Yisrael. It's very difficult to understand from this pasuk how exactly it means what we're saying it means. But if you back up a step and look at the previous pasuk, Heitiva Hashem l'tovim l'sharim b'libotam, that Kadosh Baruch Hu, we're already speaking about the righteous and the good in the eyes of Kadosh Baruch Hu. And then the next pasuk says v'hametim akal kolutam yolicham Hashem. Basically, we already start speaking about the tzaddikim, and then we say that those who make those tzaddikim that we were speaking to into, or those who distort the ways or distort the actions of the tzaddikim who we're speaking about to make it seem like what they did in their lifetime was worse than it actually was, those are the people that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will be molech to Gehenim. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu will make sure fall to Gehenim. B'shash shalom al Yisrael, yolichem Hashem polei avon. So it's very difficult to understand exactly how to teach the pasuk, but essentially we're speaking about tzaddikim, and then afterward we're speaking about those who make the tzaddikim look worse than they are, and then afterward we're speaking about HaKadosh Baruch Hu walking people to Gehenim, basically. Tana de Bereshmal, Im Reit Talmid Chacham Shavar Avera B'Laila, Al Te'arach Harav B'Yom Shemas HaTshuva. If you saw a Talmid Chacham do something wrong at night, you shouldn't assume that he's still doing that Avera by the next day, because maybe he did Tshuva after you you saw him. Shemas al kedaitach, maybe he did tshuva after you saw him. Elavada asa tshuva, he definitely did tshuva. Vanimile b'dvarim shebegufo. But that's only talking about things that are between himself and himself. Of mona adem hadolamare. But if it has to do with monetary problems that he has between himself and a friend, you don't assume that he did tshuva until he actually returned the money. Just if you saw him do something that only he himself is affected by. Vamar b'shuva ben Levi b'chavdal mekon beit din min nadei al kavod harav. There are 24 places that the Beit Din excommunicated someone because of their disrespect for the Rabbanim, and excommunication is not just kicking out of the community. It basically means, for all intents and purposes, we consider you to be dead in our regard. V'kulan shinder mishnatenu, and they're all in the Mishnayot. Amar le Rebelezer, so Rebelezer said to him, Heicha, where are they? Amar le lechi tishkach. So he says, go find them. Nafag dak veshach tlat. So he went out and he found three that were explicit in the Mishnah. Amzazim b'tila yadayim, someone who ridicules b'tila yadayim, because that's a Zerubbanan implementation to wash your hands. And those who speak poorly about Talmidei Chachamim after they die. And someone who's very arrogant in his actions or in his. Someone who's very arrogant toward Shemaim. How are you arrogant toward HaKadosh Baruch Hu? When you go into tefillah, assuming that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to answer you, or that you speak disrespectfully, assuming that obviously HaKadosh Baruch Hu is just going to answer whatever I ask him to answer, and you don't humble yourself before HaKadosh Baruch Hu and ask with a recognition that that he doesn't owe you anything. So what's the Mishnah that speaks about speaking badly about Talmidei Chachamim after they die? Ditnan. Tanna Mishnah, who Aya Omer, we're talking about Akavya ben Mahalalel, would say, Ein Shakin lo et agiyoret velo et hameshucheret. Right, that Akavya ben Mahalalel believed that there was a diuk in the Pasuk that indicated to you that when you give the Mesota, these are the waters that they would give to a woman who was accused of cheating on her husband, that if you gave it, you would give it to a Yisraelit, and it would check basically whether she cheated. If she cheated, then her stomach would implode. And if she didn't cheat, then it would become a source of tremendous bracha. But Rav Kavya ben Mahala believed that you only do that for someone who was born a Yisrael, but a convert or a non-Jewish slave who was freed and then married a Jew, you wouldn't give them the Mesota. V'chachamim amarim mishakin. Right? V'chachamim said, no, of course you give her the Mesota. She's just like anyone else. V'amulo maseh b'charkami shivcha mishucher b'Yerushalayim. But isn't there this story of Charkami, this freed slave in Yerushalayim who married Israel? V'yishkua shemai v'avtalion. And Avtalion gave her the Mesota to drink. V'amar lehem dugma yishkua. He said to him, it's a debate how exactly to read these words. We're going to read it one way and then we're going to go back and look at it a different way later on. He said, yeah, because she is similar to them. Dugma is similar to, because she is similar to them, they gave her to drink. Meaning, this was tremendously disrespectful. Shemaya and Avtalion were gerim. And what Akavya ben Mahalalel seems to be suggesting here is, obviously the right reading of the Pasuk is that gerim should not have the Mesota. It doesn't check them, it doesn't work for them. But Shemaya and Avtalion, because they themselves were gerim, they didn't appreciate that gerim were different and are not checked by the Mesota. So because they kind of had this soft spot for gerim, and they saw no reason to distinguish them in the halacha by any means, because they didn't want there to be any distinction in the halacha between gerim, because they themselves were gerim and they didn't want to accept that, they basically did the wrong thing and they were led astray by their emotions in that sense. Vinidu. And they put Akavya ben Mahalalel in excommunication for what he'd said. Umet beniduyo, and then he died in his excommunication. V'saklo beit din et arono, and then beit din pelted stones at his aron because of what a disgrace what he said was. So what is the case of someone mocking b'tila yadayim? Ditnan. So the continuation of that Mishnah we just quoted, that Mishnah was in Horiot. So now we're going to teach the continuation of that Mishnah and get a different understanding of what actually happened with Akavya ben Mahalalel. Amar b'yudah chas v'shalom shakavya ben Mahalalel nitnada. Right? Is chas v'shalom, I could even suggest that Akavya ben Mahalalel was put in nidoy, was excommunicated. You know what you're talking about? You totally got your story wrong. That's absolutely not what happened. She'en ezra, she'en azar nina elet al kol adam b'yisrael b'chachma v'tara b'yira b'yir chet ke Akavya ben Mahalalel. There's no one in Klal Yisrael who has great in wisdom and in purity and Yirat Shemayim as Akavya ben Mahalalel. So you got your facts strong. But you can still ask, okay, so he's a great person. That means he never said anything wrong? Meaning, he was a great person, but he said what he said. Does that mean he doesn't deserve excommunication? Seemingly, he still should. What does it matter that he's a great person? So Tiferet Yisrael answers as follows. It's actually, not only did you misunderstand who was put in Cherem that day, but you also misunderstood what exactly Akavya ben Mahalalel said. It's not even what he said. Remember earlier, we referenced that earlier we referenced that there are these words, dugma hishkua, that we didn't know exactly what they meant. So dugma hishkua, we initially translated as, because she is similar to them, they gave her to drink. But dugma, which means similar, can also be interpreted in the following way, right? That they gave her to drink something that is similar to her. Not that they are similar to her, so they gave her to drink. Rather, they gave her to drink something that is similar. What is the thing that's similar? Meaning they didn't actually give her the mesota, he was saying. They gave her something similar to the mesota. It was largely ceremonious, but it wasn't actually the mesota. That's what, what dugma ishkua means. So he didn't even say that about Shammai and Avtalion. He said they kind of put on this, you know, farcical, ceremony to make her think that she was drinking the mesota. Ela et midni do. Okay, so then who do they put in excommunication? Elazar ben Chanoch, right? They put in Elazar ben Chanoch in excommunication. Why should people be until Yadayim? Because he belittled the idea of until Yadayim because it was rabbinic. Ukshame shalchu beidin. And when he died, they put a large stone on his coffin to tell you that when someone dies in excommunication, they're fit to have their coffin stoned. So what's the case of someone who acts arrogantly towards Shemayim? Ditnan, as we taught in the Mishnah, Shalach lo Shimon ben Shetach l'choni me'agel. So Shimon ben Shetach sent to Choni me'agel. If you recall the story of Choni me'agel, which is in Gemara and Tanit, is the Klal Yisrael didn't have any rain, so Choni drew a circle and he said, "Kadosh Baruch Hu, I'm not leaving the circle until you give Klal Yisrael rain." And only a little bit of rain came down. And he's like, "That's not what I was talking about. I needed a lot of rain." And then a lot of rain came down and it was destructive. And he goes, "That also wasn't what I was talking about. I need proper rain that's going to be beneficial." And then beneficial rain came down. So Shimon Mechadach sent to Choni Me'agel, said, "You're being completely disrespectful. How dare you daven in such a brazen way? Tzarich talit nadot. You deserve to be excommunicated. And if you were anyone else but Choni, I myself would have put you in cherem." But what am I supposed to do? You're clearly acting disrespectful in front of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, and he's listening to you anyway. So what am I supposed to do about that? Right, about you is a pasuk that's written that, you know, even if you behave like a child, your parents will always be happy with you. But there are no other instances in the Mishnah where someone is disrespects the Rabbanan and they're excommunicated. But didn't we teach that Rav Yosef Tudus Ish Romi Niget Bnei Romi Lachilan Gidim Ukulasim Bilele Pesach? That Rav Yosef Todus from Rome told the Bnei Rome to eat these roasted lamb limbs on the night of Pesach, which is a violation of a Dirabbanan, because we are concerned that if you're eating roasted lamb on the night of Pesach, people are going to think that you're eating the Korban Pesach, even if it's Stam, it's not your Korban Pesach, you're just eating roasted lamb, and if you're doing it at an inappropriate time or in an inappropriate place, they're going to be choshesh, they're going to suspect that you're doing something wrong. So, yet he told them to do it anyway. If you weren't Todus, meaning if you weren't such a great person, I would have put you in excommunication. Because it looks like you're making Klal Yisrael eat kachim, or very high status of sanctified offerings, outside its appropriate place to do so. Meaning they weren't actually, because this wasn't the Korban Pesach, but it certainly looks like that's what you're doing, because you're having them eat lamb on the night of Pesach. And so I would have put you in cherem for disrespecting, or I would have put you in excommunication for disrespecting the Rabbanan's decree. But what can I do? You're such a great person. I'm not going to put you in cherem. But Mishnah Tenu Kamrin Vahabraitahi. No. We were only looking for places in the Mishnah. We didn't say that there are only 24 places in all of Tanaic literature, rather specifically in the Mishnah, what you just brought in was a Braita. Ubatnitin Leika, but are there no more in the Mishnah either? Vaika Adatnan Chadchu Chulia Vinatan Chol Ben Chulia Lechulia. But don't we have the case where there's a broken oven where it has holes in it and you patch up those holes with sand, right? And the question is whether the oven is going to be Tamei Tahar. Basically, only whole, proper, functional Kalim can become Tamei, can become ritually impure. A broken Kli can't become Tamei. In which case, we have this case where you have basically a broken oven that's patched up kind of improperly, patched up with sand. And the question is, is that considered that it's fixed properly such that it can contract ritual impurity? Or is it still considered broken? Rabbi Lezer Mitayr. So Rabbi Lezer says it's Tahor, meaning no, it's not fixed properly. It's still a broken Kli. V'chamim Tamim. Chamim say, no, it's Tamei because it was fixed properly. V'zehu Tanur Shel Achnai. And that's the Tanur of Achnai that was spoken about. There's a famous case in the Gemara, but we're not going to get into it right now. We don't have time. My Achnai. What is an Achnai? Or why was it called Achnai? I'm Rav Yudah. I'm Rav Shmuel. I'm Lamed Shekifu. I'm Elchot Ke Achnai. Zeh Vitamei. right? They basically, an achnai is a snake that, you know, wraps itself into a ball, wraps itself into a circle. So too, they wrapped him basically in a circle of proofs from every single side that the oven should be considered tameh. That's what's called Tanur Achnai. V'tanya, and about that Mishnah, about the Tanur Achnai, it was taught as follows. Otoyom eviyu kol ha'tarot sh'tiyah Rabbi Elazar v'sar from lefanav v'sov barchu. So and on that day, they brought out everything that he said was Tahor, and they burnt it in front of him, because they believed that he was incorrect, and they put him in Cherem for being Cholek on all the Rabbanan, after they explicitly paskened that the oven was Tameh. Afilu achi nidu matnit in lotnan. Right, but no, still then, this doesn't count. Why? Because even though Tanur Achnai is a Mishnah, where did we actually learn that Rabbi Elazar was put in Cherem? Only in the Braita that was taught about that Mishnah. In the Mishnah itself, it doesn't teach that. Okay, so where are these 24 places? We only found three of them. Rabbi Shua ben Levi, Medaba Milta Milta. No, the reason why Rabbi Shua ben Levi has so many is because he would compare cases, meaning even if it didn't say explicitly, and this person was put in Cherem, he would look in the Mishnah and say, oh, this person is disrespecting the Rabbanan. I know three places where people who disrespect the Rabbanan are put into Cherem, so I'm going to assume that these people were put in Cherem also. That's not to say that they were explicitly put in Cherem, but he looked at similar cases where people disrespected the Rabbanan and assumed that they had the same response. But Rabbi Elazar would not compare cases. He only found three explicit cases, because that's as many as there were, and he didn't assume that in other cases of disrespect, they were also put in Cherem. No samita v'chalufayim. So we said in the Mishnah that those who are attending to the needs of the deceased, you're carrying his coffin, and those who are switching them out are part of Kriyat Shema. Tanur Rabbanan Imotzi Enav Tameit Samuch Kriyat Shema. You don't take out the mate right before Kriyat Shema. V'mitchil or Mafsikin. But if you already started, you don't stop. Einiva Rav Yosef of Kuvah Samuch Kriyat Shema. But didn't they take out Rav Yosef right before Kriyat Shema? Adam Chashu Shani. No, Rav Yosef was a very important person, so he was different. It's not respectful to leave such an important person deceased and unburied. Shlofneim Mitzalash Achar Mita. Now we're speaking about the people who are before the deceased and after the deceased, meaning those who have yet to handle and participate in the Meit Mitzvah, and those who have already participated in the Meit Mitzvah. Tanur Rabbanan Osek Be'esped Bisman Shemet Mutalafaneim Nishmatin Echad Echad V'Korin. Right, so those who are involved in the eulogy, one by one, you leave and read Kriyat Shema and come back. But if the mate is not before them, right? So they sit down and say Kriyat Shema. If the mate's not there, and him, the mourner himself, just sits quietly, doesn't say anything because he's an onan and he's puter from all mitzvot. They stand up and daven. And he stands up and recognizes to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that what happened was divine justice. I've sinned a lot. He says, I've sinned a lot before you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and I haven't been punished for even 1/1000th of what I've done wrong. Right? So may it be your will, Kadosh Baruch Hu, that you pay us back in mercy and not in punishment. You don't actually say this tzidok hadin. Why? Because you're not supposed to invite the satan to come in, give him an opportunity to punish you. Meaning you shouldn't say that, oh, you know, I've sinned so much, I'm such a terrible person, I've never even been punished for it. That's just giving the satan an opportunity to come in and punish you. Amar Rav Yosef, Mikra, how do you know that? What pasuk indicates to you that you shouldn't create an opening for the satan to come in and suggest that you're a terrible person deserve to be punished? Shenemar kimat kesdom ayinu. It says in Yeshayahu, we were almost like Sodom, meaning we were almost wiped out like the people of Sodom. Maya hadalu navi. And then what does the navi say about those people afterward? Shemu devar Hashem kitzinei Sodom. The navi refers to them as the officers of Sodom. So they said we were kind of almost like Sodom, and then he refers to them as people from Sodom from that point on to suggest to them that if you're going to compare yourself to Sodom, you're going to make yourself sound like Rishayim. That's exactly how we're going to treat you. Rather, don't speak about yourself like you're a Russia. Don't open your mouth and suggest that you deserve to be punished. Keep it to yourself. Kavru et hamed v'chazru. Right, so we said in the Mishnah that if you have time after you bury the dead to say Kriyat Shema and then get back in line so that you can offer condolences to the mourners, you should do so, but only if you have time to say the whole thing. Seemingly that means that if you have time to say all of Kriyat Shema, you should do that, but if you only have time for one paragraph or one pasuk, then no, you shouldn't do it. Raminu, but we have a contradictory tonight statement. Cover the Meit V'chazerum, Yucholim Latchil V'ligmor Afilu Paragoch Afilu Pasuk Echad. So even if you have time to read one paragraph or one pasuk, inachinami, you should do it. Nachinami kamar im yicholin latchil v'ligmor afilu perag echad or afilu pasuk echad ad shelo yagiu l'shura yatchilu v'imlav lo yatchilu. No, that's the proper way to understand our mission as well, right? You just weren't medayik it properly, but that is how we understand our mission as well. Not if you have time to say the entire thing, but even if you have time to say a substantial bit, like one pasuk or one paragraph. Ha'omdim b'shura. Right? So now we're going to, I mean, what does it mean that those who are standing in line, we differentiate between the people on the inside of the line and the outside of the line. Tan Rabbanan shura ro'a p'nima p'tura, v'sheina ro'a p'nima chayevet. Right? So the part of the line that sees inside to the mourner himself, they're pater. But the part of the line who are the people on the outside of the line who don't see the inside and where the mourner is sitting, they're chayev. Rabbi Yehuda omer, hevia machamat, Hevia machamat avel pturin machamat atzman chayavin. Right? Oh, I'm sorry. Habaim machamat avel pturin machamat atzman chayavin. So those who came for the sake of offering condolences to the mourner, so they're pater. But those who came just to see, like, oh wow, what's going on here? This is very interesting. I wonder, you know, who died. So they didn't come for the mourner and they're chayav. They came for themselves just to see what's going on. Now we're going to debate a very interesting case after we just spoke about kavod for the Rabbanan, and we're speaking about the different ramifications of the offer, the respect and honor that we give to mourners. We're going to debate the following case. Can an Isser Deoraita in the Torah, or any Isser, be pushed out of the way because of the respect and honor that you're supposed to afford to another human being? That's the case that we're going to be dealing with, and we have a number of different cases to try to figure out the answer to that question. Right? What we commonly refer to as Kavod HaBriot. Does respect and honor that you owe other people perhaps take precedence over different commandments? Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav, Hamotzi Kilayim BeBigdo, Poshtan Afil B'Shok. Someone who finds Kilayim, right, wool and linen mixed together, which an Isser Deoraita to wear, even if you find them in your clothing, even if you're walking in the marketplace, you have to take them off. Even though, yeah, sure, it's going to be embarrassing for you that you're going to walk around without any clothing, but you need to take them off. My time. What's the reason? Meaning, you could say, you have all the pilpulim in the world. No, it doesn't make sense. I shouldn't take it off. It's disrespectful. It's embarrassing. But Kadosh Baruch Hu said not to wear this. And if Kadosh Baruch Hu said, don't wear wool and linen mixed together, and he didn't include some kind of stipulation like, oh, unless, of course, you're walking in public and then you're allowed to, then you have to say that regardless of what you think is bad and what you think is good, you have to say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's knowledge trumps, and you have to take off your clothing, even in the marketplace. Meaning, what we learn from there is that kavod that you're supposed to give to Rabbanim, and kavod really to any individual, their honor, respect, deserving of that every individual deserves, is a tremendous thing. However, when it comes in contrast with a mitzvah mideoraita, you have to assume that HaKadosh Baruch Hu knew what he was talking about, and if there was supposed to be kavod given to this person in spite of this mitzvah mideoraita, he would have said so. Because he didn't say so, you have to assume that you have to follow the mitzvah, even when it comes to the expense of someone else's kavod. We're going to challenge that position. Right, so someone, a mourner, just buried his deceased relative, and he's coming back from the grave, and there are two ways that he could walk. One of them is tahor, and one of them is tameh. Ba b'tahora, bayin imo b'tahora. If he walks in the tahor one, so then you walk with him in the tahor one. Ba b'tameh, bayin imo b'tameh. Right, but if he walks down the tameh path, then you walk with him in the tameh path. And notice, we're actually speaking about kohanim here, right? So the kohanim are, it is usher for them, usher deoraita for them to become tameh. But we're telling them that you should accompany the mourner, even though he's walking through a graveyard and he's going to become tameh. So that's usher deoraita. But why do you do it? Mishum kvodo. Because we want to give honor and respect to the mourner. But that would seem to suggest that honor and respect deserving to the mourner trumps the isser deoraita of a kohen to become tameh. But just say that there's an isser deoraita here, and no amount of, meaning no amount of pilpulim in your head is going to justify, meaning, yeah, sure, you think it's very important to respect this guy and show him the necessary honor. But there's an Isser Deoraita here, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu knew what he was talking about, and it didn't give you this stipulation, so why on earth would you accompany him to the Tameh path? And Rabbi says, no, we're talking about Beit HaPras, the Rabbanan, which is the Rabbanan Tameh. Beit HaPras is not an actual graveyard, but it's a field that a dead body was buried in, and since then it has been plowed over, and so we don't assume that there's any one area that's going to cause ritual impurity on a deoraita level. We don't really have time to get into all the details of how ritual impurity is spread, but basically you can come in direct contact with something, or if it's a substantial amount of impurity, you can even become tameh, what's called be'ohel. If you're standing in the general airspace of the tameh object, then you become tameh even if you don't touch it, just by walking over it. But since we assume that a field that was plowed, there's no substantial amount of the deceased least in one area, rather maybe just a tiny, tiny bit of the dead body. So then as long as you're not touching it, you're not tame, because the tiny bit of the dead body isn't mitame be'ohel. You don't actually contract too much just by standing in the airspace. Because Rav Shmuel said that you can just kind of, you know, clear the dust out of the way in front of you to make sure that you're not actually stepping on part of a dead body, and you can walk through Beit HaPras, and that's completely fine. It's only rabbinic. Rav Yehuda bar Ashi mishmei derav Beit HaPras shenidash tahor. Alternatively, that once everyone has kind of walked over a Beit HaPras and there is clear, you know, established, you know, walking paths within the Beit HaPras, you assume that there is no more traces of dead body there while, where people are walking. And because it's rabbinic, what we say is that the rabbis, when they made these ordinances, they did not make them in a way that would require you to violate the basic honor and decency that you show to other human beings. So even though you're not allowed to violate a Torah level commandment, because this is only contracting tumah on a rabbinic level, you'd be allowed to violate it for the purpose of showing honor to the avel. Tashma. So we're going to try to prove from a different case that perhaps we see that you're allowed to violate a commandment for the sake of giving someone honor or respect. Damar Lazar Bar Tzadok. Right, so I recall when we used to run over graves to greet the Malchei Israel, the kings of Egypt, the kings of Israel. And not only kings of Israel we do this for, even you're allowed to do it for non-Jewish kings, because when you meet a non-Jewish king and then afterward you meet a Jewish king, you get to see the distinction between them, and you get even a more profound appreciation for the Jewish kings, and that gives you more respect for them. But we see that they clearly just walked over graves. But what we just said about a full, proper grave is that they're metame be'ohel. You can't walk over their airspace. You become tame. Amai, lemen chachma entvuna yenetze neged Hashem. Meaning you want to show respect for this guy, but there's an Israel right, you're not allowed to show respect for them just because you think it's important to show respect. Doesn't mean you're allowed to violate one of God's commandments. No, we're following the opinion of Rava. Da'amar Rava, Davar Torah, Oel, Kol Sheyesh Bo Chalal Tevach V'Chotzetz Mipnei Atuma, V'en Bo Chalal Tevach Eino Chotzetz Mipnei Atuma. So again, we don't have time to get into all the details of how you do and don't contract ritual Tuma, but basically there's a stipulation by Tumat Ohel, by contracting Tuma within the airspace of something, that if basically the Tame, if the Tame object is directly beneath solid objects between you, and you're standing on top of those solid objects, then you're tame because you're in its airspace. However, if there's an airspace of a tefach directly over the tame thing, meaning a completely hollowed out airspace directly over the tame thing, and then after that hollowed out airspace you have solid ground, you no longer are tame, you're no longer considered in the ohel. Its ohel is already contained within that place, and anything afterward is no longer tame. And most coffins have a solid one tefach of airspace after the deceased, and therefore, the coffin, beyond the space of the coffin, should not be metame. There shouldn't be any airspace after it. It should be stopped by the end of the coffin. But they made a rabbinic gzera on all coffins, even the ones that have a tefach of airspace, that in theory should not make you impure from its airspace, because of the ones that don't have a tefach. Right? And because it was a rabbinic implementation to assume that to make all coffins tame, even the ones that have a tefach of airspace in them, which shouldn't be tame on a deraita level, because that was a rabbinic, for the sake of showing honor to Jewish kings, the rabbis did not make a gzera that you weren't allowed to do that. Tashma, we'll try to prove again that perhaps Kavod HaBriot is more important, or can enable you to violate a Lo Ta'aseh in the Torah. Gadol Kavod HaBriot Shedoche Et Lo Ta'aseh Shebetorah. Mefurash Mishnah, right? That Kavod HaBriot is so important that it actually pushes away one of the Lo Ta'aseh of the Torah. V'amai, why would that be the case, that a Kavod HaBriot can trump a Lo Ta'aseh in the Torah? Limei Nechachma Yevin Tzvura Ein Eitz Neged Hashem. Just say, you should say that no amount of Kavod that you think you deserve to a person is more important than a Kodesh Baruch Hu's commandments. Tirgma Rav Bar Shiba Kamei de Rav Kana. So Rav Bar Shiba said the following. Belav de Lo Ta'aseh. Which Lo Ta'aseh? We're not just talking about every Lo Ta'aseh. We're talking about a very specific Lo Ta'aseh. Which Lo Ta'aseh? The Lav of Lo Ta'aseh. What is Lo Ta'aseh? According to the Pshat, Lo Ta'aseh is basically, you don't know what the halacha is, so you go to the rabbi, and the rabbi tells you what the halacha is, and you have to listen to him. When the rabbi tells you what the psak is, you must listen to him. You ask for a din Torah, what he tells you is the law. So there's an issue, there's a commandment, mi deoraita, not to ignore the words that the rabbi has told you. So what does it mean, lav de lo tasur? It means that it's the mitzvah lo tase in the Torah, not to ignore the rabbis. And so there, in a sense, it's rabbinic. Achiku alei. So they laughed at him. Lav de lo tasur deoraita, meaning what does it make a difference that it's the lav that tells you to listen to the rabbis? It's still deoraita. We have to explain exactly what that means in a second. Amar Rav Kana, Gavar Rabba, Amar Milta, Lo Tachichu. He says, first of all, a great man said something, you shouldn't laugh at him. Kol Mile Derabanan Asmechinu. And furthermore, every Derabanan mitzvah that we have, you know, everything we said so far, and Mukta, and, you know, whatever it is that the Rabbanan tell you to do, that is all based on that pasuk, Alav de Lotaser, Mishum Kvod HaShar Rabbanan. And so every rabbinic implementation that you have, right, is based on the Isser to violate the words of the rabbis. And that comes from that pasuk. So what do they think he said, and what did he actually say? What they thought he said was that if you go to a rabbi and they tell you what the halacha is, even if they're quoting a deoraita halacha, that's what they thought he meant. Meaning when you go to a rabbi and they quote you a deoraita law, that you have to listen to them, but for kavod abrio, we say, no, you don't have to listen to them if it's kavod abrio. They said, what does it make a difference? If who told you the law? If the Torah told you the law, or if the rabbis told you the law, it's a deoraita law. Who cares? Why do we care who told you about it? And the conclusion is that, no, we're not talking about when the Rabbanan tell you a deoraita law that you didn't know or didn't realize. We're talking about when the Rabbanan tell you a law that is rabbinic in nature because they created this law. That is what he meant by the law of Lotasur. That whenever the rabbis make a principle, they always can include within it a caveat that it shouldn't violate the kavod of Bnei Adam. We'll stop here.